With stations all over the U.S., North America, Puerto Rico, Guam, and by satellite, we are Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here of Blue Rock Talk with Connie Willis. I hope you'll join me on my YouTube channel, Blue Rock Talk with Connie Willis. Go over there, subscribe. We have a lot of fun all the time. And if you like Coast to Coast, you'll like my shows too. A lot of fun. So here's a first-time guest on Coast to Coast. His name is Paul Sinclair. And as I said before, he is, I've heard that he's like the Sherlock Holmes of UK. He's in a neat little area. I think he calls it the affected area. I don't know if he calls the whole thing that, so we'll ask him about that. But really, really neat guy. Just met him, heard about him a lot. He's very well known in the UK and a very serious investigator of anything strange. And he studies an area known as like the Skinwalker Ranch of the UK. And it's also close by is like the Bermuda Triangle of the UK. And not far from that, the area of the Skinwalker Ranch is an investigation where it's one of the oldest stories of mankind, where it has occurred and still does to this day in the wake of Halloween coming. And in lieu of Willis Ween tonight, we're going to discuss the Flixton Werewolf. This is the world's oldest accounts of what is claimed to be werewolves. And no one has ever researched these accounts more than Paul Sinclair. Now, we can talk to him about so many things, but tonight we're going to talk about the werewolves. We're going to talk about the Flixton Werewolf. So, Paul Sinclair, Paul, welcome to Coast to Coast. How are you?
I'm good, Connie, and thank you very much for allowing me to come on here and share a bit of the information. You know, when I first started researching for the Truth Proof books, the story of the Flixton Werewolf kept appearing. You know, little snippets of information would come through, and I, in all fairness, I never expected myself doing as much in-depth research about a werewolf, because I'm not here tonight to subscribe to the idea of lycanthropy. However, I do believe something exists, something very real, otherwise it would not have been reported and come through the over a period of hundreds of years, you know, sort of through the ages, in fact. I mean, it's an ancient piece of earth where this story originates from, Connie, which is the Flixton Star Car, which is probably the most important archaeological site in Britain and one of the most important sites in the world. You know, some of your listeners may not have even heard of it, but it's worth researching. And the Star Car is Mesolithic, Middle Stone Age. I'll just give you a brief outline of the area.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's an archaeological site dating back to 9000 BC. As I say, this is Middle Stone Age. Just after the Ice Age, people settled there, and these people weren't just hunter gatherers. They actually settled on Flixton Star Car. Now, the lake has gone now. All we've got is marshland. And to be honest with you, if a herd of cows ran across Star Car, you can, in certain places, you can feel the ground reverberate because it's so marshy. But these earliest people, I mean, there's the evidence of people. The first house or home ever built is by these early settlers in the UK. And what's interesting, in the research, it turns out that the archaeologists also found red deer skull caps, as in like a headdress with holes in for eyes and leather straps to hold them on. But they believe that these early people were shaman and they practiced shamanic practice. Now, I'm not saying that is the reason we have the stories of the Flixton Werewolf, but it is interesting that when you sort of cast your mind towards the transformation into other animals and other beasts, that as this story come through from these early people, I mean, I think we have to consider these things. As I say, I don't particularly think there's a person running around in cut-off pants howling at the moon, but I 100% believe that the people who've come forward and told me the stories of the Flixton Werewolf are telling the truth. I mean, if you like, a refuge was built, Connie, in the 10th century at a place called Spittle Corner in Flixton. It was built by a king. All this can be researched, listeners. You know, it's not just things that Paul's made up. And the king was Athelstan, and he gave a knight the job of building the refuge. And the knight, it's a fabulous name, was called Acehorn. And so he built this refuge to protect travelers from an infestation of savage beasts.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's fabulous. That's where the name Spittle, hospital, comes from. So this refuge was built, that's why they call it Spittle Corner. Lest they be devoured. I was lucky enough to contact the people who now own what is now the Spittle Inn. After it ceased being a refuge hundreds of years ago, because this was in 937 that this refuge was built. So we're going back a long way, obviously not as far back as the early settlers of Starkar.
But it was built to protect. But it was built to protect travelers from an infestation of savage beasts.
Lest they be devoured, it said. Now I've looked at their deeds, and they've got some of the deeds that are on parchment, and that's what it says. And there is documentation online that you'll find that it says this. We must also not forget, Connie, that you know during this time we would have had wolves prevalent in the UK and bears. So, you know. We're not necessarily entirely talking about a werewolf, but these stories are quite incredible, because when you look at the land and you go into the research, you discover that Flixton was once called Wolfland, which is interesting. And now it's now Flixton, but on old maps, there's areas of Flixton depicted as Wolfland.
Oh, wow.
And just a few miles
somebody,
away, there's...
Somebody changed the name to make it like maybe be seen safer or something, or they didn't want people to think of the old myths maybe, or, you know, why would someone change the name? I mean, that sounds like, there's a reason why it was named that.
Yeah, well, there's a reason, and we've got connotations to the wolf, you know, and it is true, it's proper research, this, that can be sort of backed up if anyone else wanted to look into it.
Sure.
You know, there's a small village just a few miles away called Hundmanby, and if you break down the name and then go back in history and look, do some sort of research, Hund, as in hound, man, by, it used to be called Farmstead of the Houndman.
Mm.
So we've got all these sort of incredible connections to the wolf and to the dog. There's an house that stood on some old maps called Bandog House. We realise once again that this does not throw us into the realms of the werewolf. But then when I started collecting these stories, when I went and spoke to first-hand witnesses, going back to the 1940s, I mean, one of these guys is still alive. And, well, Connie, I think we could probably just jump into this and start telling some of the stories of the
Flixton
werewolf.
Oh, absolutely. I'm listening to you. I'm enjoying myself. This is Willis Ween. I'm in the dark. The lights are dim. I'm listening to these nice little stories, getting me into the Willis Ween mood. So take it away. I'm very interested in hearing about the werewolves. And not only do I want to hear about the instances, but let me know if you think any of this has to do with what we also call Dogman.
This is a good point. So before we start that, yeah, I think that this probably is connected to what you call Dogman, which I would say is a relatively new term. And werewolf is an interesting term, but we always have the ridicule factor, I feel, because people obviously are thrown into images of the full moon and movies, which are entertaining and good, but there's something real behind this subject. I don't profess to have the answers. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in Flixton Wold, including spending a night there alone just to get a feel of the place. Apart from hearing tree knocks, which I know that's not associated with the Dogman, it's more a Bigfoot type thing. Incidentally, the lady at the Spittle Inn did say that she believed a Bigfoot was in the woods at Flixton. But we need to stay on the Flixton werewolf. Do not let me...
Well, let me say something to that, because you sent, you know, when I first... we were introduced and I was talking to you and I was getting your information and looking more into you. You actually sent me a video of where you were showing where one of these wolves, you know, where they had been seen in the area, and you walked right by Right in your video, you walked right by what people would believe was a Bigfoot blind made by a Bigfoot. You walked right by it. I went, oh my gosh, he's got signs of Bigfoot around him as he's talking about the Flixton werewolf. So I believe what that lady said.
This is correct. There's branch anomalies, that's what I've been calling them, everywhere, in concentrated areas. I mean, part of the reason, Connie, that I'm not so sure that this dogman that is so popular to tell stories of in your part of the world and here now is flesh and blood in the true sense of the word that we believe it, that flesh and blood is because I listen to the stories of hunters and the weapons that they've used and shot these creatures and said, we've shot its center mass with a 30-yard 6 or even bigger weapons, and it's not moved. Now, that it doesn't mean that this guy's romancing and he hasn't seen this creature, but it's sort of also telling us that there's something more than just flesh and blood to these creatures. I mean, I've spent time researching and contacting American Indians, you know, because I suspected that the Flixton werewolf was what you'll call a skinwalker. And they've sort of, I wouldn't say confirmed this, because none of us can say, yes, that's what it is, but it's leaning towards that. And the fact that I'm glad I've sort of thought about this. A lot of the sightings are around ancient earthworks, burial mounds, 3,600-year-old burial mounds. That is Neolithic. That's these earthworks. I don't know whether you have them in the States, but we've got them all over the UK. And you do find that a lot of UFO-related sightings and even alien big cats, which aren't native to the UK, lots of things are seen around these earthworks. And I don't think it's by chance. I think early man probably put his sites of great importance, or what he would consider great importance, on and in these locations, because location is key. And these little mm-hmm. villages around the old lake, Lake Flixton, which is, as we've said, is now dried up, seem to have their first share of these sightings of what's been termed the Flixton werewolf. Now, one of the earliest sightings I got was from a farmer who has a farm called Bridge Farm at a place called, I think it's Binnington, just out of Flixton. And he told me that this is not some terrifying encounter, but nevertheless it's interesting. He told me that as a young boy, 14 or 15 years old, he worked with an elderly farmer at Caton. Now, Caton is only a mile away from Flixton, Connie, across the dried-up lake bed. On the edge of the car, the Star Car. And Cars, interestingly, people, is spelled C-A-R-R-S, and it means wetland, so it's nothing to do with cars. So he said that he worked for this old farmer who was elderly then, when he was a young boy, called Jimmy Keith. I mean, I'm sure people in Caton's history will still remember this guy. And Jimmy Keith always swore that he'd seen this fur-covered man, about 7 foot tall, covered in hair, on the Caton cars. He'd seen it once. He claimed that his father had seen it and his grandfather had seen it. And that's sort of an historic sighting from Jimmy Keith, going back to the 1940s, who probably saw it even earlier than that, probably in the 1920s, this Jimmy Keith guy. And they're not talking about something hugely muscular from what I can gather out of these stories. And then to stay in 1948, we can just about date this one. There's a series of burial mounds at the top of Staxton Wold. Staxton and Flixton are so close together that they would, if you merged them, they would still be a small village. And these young boys, aged about 11 at the time, Hello?
Hello?
Did you hear that noise?
I did. What was that?
I honestly thought my phone had exploded. That was right, let me carry on. That was strange. I thought I was going to be out of speaking to you then. That was really weird.
Whoa, it's getting creepy now. I did. I thought, like, you slammed the phone down.
No, it's in my hand. Anyway, let me carry on. 1948.
All right. Okay.
It's creepy. Whatever it was came through the back of the phone to my ear.
Ooh.
It sounded like, I don't know, anyway.
Well, and the crazy thing, too, just so everybody knows out there, that, you know, Paul he studies all sorts of things. So, you know, lights in the sky, lights coming from the water, UFOs, night people, you know, he's got all sorts of things going on. So usually a lot of times, Paul, when like truth comes out, sometimes other things try to stop it. So just classic stuff. So anyway, go ahead. It gave me a little scare when I heard that, you know, noise too. So
we haven't been cut off because I thought something had gone wrong with phone, but that's cool. It's over. So jumping back now, 1948, there's a series of burial mounds at the top of Flixton and Staxton Wold called Sharp Howe. That is their name. Howe means burial mound, listeners, H-O-W-E. And these young boys, in approximately 1938, were up there one late summer's evening. They were both aged about 11. One of them's passed away now. The other one still lives in the village. And they were playing, and they were up around these burial mounds, and he said that, you know, it was a time when you could sort of, people left their doors unlocked. There was not the crime that there is now, and children could play out late and do what they wanted, and it was sort of a late summer evening, 9:30, and they're approaching the burial mound of Sharp Howe. And there's a huge tree growing out of the side of the burial mound, and it's still there today, because I was up there, I did a bit of filming on it a few weeks ago. And they claim that this creature was sort of squatted down on its haunches, looking at something in its hands. And they definitely said hands, and these hands had claws. They couldn't say how tall it would have been. If it had stood up, they would have said it was well over 6 foot tall. But essentially, it had the head, not unlike an Alsatian's, and the covered in hair, but sort of the features of a dog. But a mixture of both. And they're stood looking at this thing, not very close, but they're looking at it, and they can't believe what they're looking at. And they said very slowly, it lifted its head, it had been looking at something, and they said its hands, and looked at them. Now, they didn't say it had glowing red eyes or anything like that. Now, they turned and ran as fast as they could, and they were off on their heels on the way home. Now, this thing never pursued them. Now, that's another thing that makes me think, I mean, we'll be looking at an apex predator here, and it has that kind of, I don't know, that kind of reaction when it sees what would ultimately be prey. And it did nothing. Now, they carried that story all those years, these chaps. I mean, this guy's old now who's related it. And when I first went round the area of Flixton in probably, years ago, inquiring about the Flixton werewolf story and trying to speak to locals to the area, I spoke to this guy. And he said he'd heard of the story but knew nothing about it. And one particular day, I'm sort of there on one summer's day, actually, and I bumped into him again. Well, I made a point of bumping into him. And I told him how far I'd got, and I explained that Flixton was once called Wolfland. And he says, oh, you've got that far, have you? You are sort of researching this. I said, yeah. He said, well, I've seen it. And that is the story that I've just related to you.
And you can see that picture on our website of a drawing of that, a sketching, at coasttocoastam.com. Connie Willis here, more with Paul Sinclair and the werewolf, the Flixton County werewolf. It's Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here, celebrating Willis Ween. We are talking with Paul Sinclair of the UK, out there right now, early morning for him. And we're talking about basically the werewolves of London, the Flixton werewolf in particular. And if you go to our website, there's some really great sketches from some of the witness testimonies of what was seen. And we were just talking previously with Paul about the werewolf that was seen holding something. And if you go to the site, you'll see featured these sketches that Paul did, by the way, as an artist as well. And just when you see it coming to life, but while someone's, you know, drawn it, it really adds so much to the story from the witnesses. Now, Paul, wonderful artist sketchings that you did. I know that you're an artist as well and a former carpenter. So now what you do is you're retired and you enjoy going and checking out all these mysteries, correct?
That's correct, Connie. Yeah, it seems to be a passion that I've had all my life due to my early involvement in things of an unexplained nature, shall we say. And I'm just in a position now where I can sort of pour all my time into the research. The Truth Proof books are not just about werewolves, though. We've got missing people, unexplained lights, which I've termed intelligent light forms, all manner of unexplained things around this area. Before I continue, Connie, I need to tell you that this phone, which had brand new, good quality batteries in it, is almost flat. So if it goes dead, please ring me back. I've put a wired phone at the side of me.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm seriously, they're showing one bar. They were brand new. I'll not say the make, but both of these phones have had brand new batteries in. But you know, the one in the living room and the one in this room. But I've grabbed a wired phone and I've put that outside of me in case it goes dead, and then we've not got a problem. Would you like me to jump back into these stories?
Oh, absolutely. Before you do, though, and that is interesting about your batteries. Before you go into it. Tell us the names of your books.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, the first one is Truth Proof, The Truth That Leaves No Proof. As I say, it covers all manner of unexplained phenomena. The second one is Truth Proof 2, Beyond the Thinking Mind. The third one's just about ready to be published, and I've started a fourth one. That was actually started before the third, but a case arose in 2017, to 2018 about animal mutilations at a place called Bempton that I've just not... I had to leave the night people and continue with another Truth Proof book. The strange things that are happening up on that area of coast are quite unbelievable. We've done a small film called The Bempton Phenomena, which can be found if anyone wants to look online. And Chris Turner, the filmmaker, is releasing a film, Dogman-related, Bigfoot-related, called Elusive, which is going to be quite incredible. But enough of me.
No. You're so modest. It's great. But no, I want to know more of those things because it was really tough. I want to tell everybody out there that how tough it was that in meeting Paul and hearing about Paul and talking with Paul, that it was really hard to narrow down what should we talk about, because I could talk about this stuff on and on and on, just like you. And you also like to study all sorts of things and pull it together. So it was very difficult to go, well, holy cow, what do we pull down for a couple hours and really focus in on? So that's where, of course, you know, talking about the werewolves is perfect for right now. For the time, yeah. But definitely want to bring you back on with all these other wonderful things. So, yes, I'll go ahead and let you get back to the werewolf stories of the such old stories of the Flixton werewolf.
Yeah, that's correct. And once again, I say location is key, Connie. These things seem to crop up in these concentrated areas, along with all other manner of unexplained phenomena. Interestingly, there's military installations in these areas. I'm sure your listeners will have found this in their research, because at the top of Staxton Wold, at the side of Flixton, we've got RAF Staxton Wold, which is the oldest operational RAF base in the world, still operational. But, you know, before it was an RAF base, where it's built on an old Roman hill fort. All these lands of sort of high importance. But we've sort of moved from the 1940s, and I have a few small accounts from the 1960s. The village of Seema, which is very close and sits onto the edge of the old prehistoric Lake Flixton, there's a farmer there walking along what I call the Seema drains. Now, when they say drains, these are just land drainage ditches, because this area is still waterlogged and has to be sort of well-drained for the cattle and other livestock to graze on and what have you. And he's walking along the Seema drains in the night, and he comes to a gate and puts his hand over the top of the gate to release the clasp, and claims that a large clawed hand put its hand on his. I've spoken to this guy. This is in the 1960s this happened. He's got no recollection of seeing a werewolf or seeing anything else, just this hand that went over the top of his and frightened him to death. And he could see the hand and he felt the hand. So there is a physical presence to whatever we're dealing with. Didn't harm him. Terrified him, but didn't harm him. Then in 1967, or we know we've got an approximate, it could have been 68, it could have been 66, but we've got 67, and spoken to these guys. Two men coming home on a motorbike, you know, pillion as well, after a night out in the seaside town of Filey, which would be about 6 miles away. And the only road into Flixton is the A1039. That's why a lot of the stories of the Flixton werewolf seem to feature this road, because that's, I suppose, the place where everybody's commuting. They're driving quite late at night, and they catch something coming out of the side of a dike. And they can see it in the headlights. The headlight, his mates can see it. He's tapping, what is it? And it's, they have to pass this thing, and it's a large hair-covered man. Once again, he didn't pursue them as we perceive some kind of raving monster to do, but they said he had red eyes, and it was dark brown in colour and very big, lean but very big. I struggle to believe there's a breeding population of these things, you know. I honestly believe that we're seeing a glimpse into some other dimension, and where at times these thin areas, this area, allows these things to slip through into our sphere of existence.
So you're talking about portals, right?
Yeah, I mean, if that's the word we're going to use for it, Connie, yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, there's got to be some reason, because otherwise we wouldn't have such gaps between the sightings. You would think if you'd got a large predator such as this, it would need to feed. You would see the carnage that it left, even if it was living on wild game such as deer, and they are plentiful around these parts. You would still find some kind of evidence, and we're not seeing that. I mean, at Bempton, I did say earlier into the talk, you know, that we are having animal mutilations at Bempton, but whatever's killing the animals at Bempton is choosing just to remove the eyes, ears, and skin the face. That's not the work of any known predator I know. But at Flixton, we're not seeing that. We're just getting little cameos of stories that are cropping up throughout the years, throughout the decades,
And that's just the people that have been courageous enough to tell it.
That's correct, Connie. I should imagine there's a lot more. I mean, like the old guy in 1948, he told me he'd heard of the story but knew nothing about it when I first spoke to him. And it was only when he realised that I were taking it serious and I were doing some deep research. And he did actually say to me, he said, if you've not lived in this village 50 years, we wouldn't even consider you local. It's crazy. You know, so a lot of the outsiders, I mean, they may read about these things. I mean, in the 1970s, we've come to that now. There's a story from the 1970s, and it was first written about. I didn't research this one. It were in a book called The Ghost Hunter's Handbook, and it talks of a huge werewolf, a biped dog, attacking a timber wagon on the A1039 road, jumping onto the windscreen. This is in the 1970s, and I can't remember the name of the author, but I spoke to people in the village if they actually remembered that. I went to there's a sawmill at Flixton, the Flixton sawmill. But, you know, we're going back 40 years. A lot of these people won't work there anymore. The interesting thing was that they had heard of the story, but they also knew of the Flixton werewolf. And like you just sort of alluded to there, Connie, people know about this thing. People see these unusual things, and not everybody wants to step forward and hold their hand up or put their head above the parapet because of the ridicule factor. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, it doesn't stop change the fact that this thing is real. I firmly believe it's real. What is real, I don't know, but it's real in some sense of the word. You know, so there's Binnington is just outside of Flixton, Connie. It's another small village. We're only looking 3 miles away. And this is a daylight sighting by quite a group of people that claim that this huge biped dog, and interestingly, they said it had glowing red eyes. Now, this is in the daytime. Mm. Ran across a field chasing cows. A few of the cows died because they ran into a ravine. There's no reports of it feasting on any cows. That's all we've got is, when we say chasing, I suppose they were spooked. I mean, if you go into a field of cattle, you know, a human usually can get them on the move if you were that way inclined, sort of thing. So that's a 1970s sighting. And then there's a very interesting one from a place called Grindale. Can you still hear me? Okay, Connie.
Yep.
Yeah,
I'm
sometimes
listening to
chicken
you. I was
corn.
wondering about the, I was actually wondering about the cows. I've never seen cows really run very fast. They're
Well,
usually looking at you
that's
like, what?
correct. Yeah. But you know that is the story. I mean, the Flixton cars
Gotcha.
have got the cattle grazing. It's lush land, with it being the old sort of lake bed. I imagine the sediments and everything have produced sort of very fertile ground. But
Yeah.
yeah, I don't think that's why the cows are not racehorses, in it. You know, they're not that fast. But in the 1970s, once again. Now, I've spoke to this guy numerous times and recorded his sighting. And he did a bit of poaching in the 1970s, you know, catching hares and rabbits and pheasants in woods and places that he shouldn't have been, on private land. And it was at a place called Fox Cover Wood in Grindale, which is 8 miles from Flixton. And he still lives in Grindale. And it's an interesting story. He said he was with his friend. He said, and he'd noted for the past week or 2 weeks that something was ripping the prey out of his snares. He made snares to catch the rabbits and the hares and the other game, small game. And his words, his proper sort of Bridlington type, born and bred, and his words, but it were ragging them out of my snares. He said, but we couldn't suss what it was. He said, we just couldn't understand what was doing it. He said, and there was still a bit of snow on ground. You could see sort of rows of it on, as you're looking over towards the open fields. And he's on the edge of Fox Cover Wood with his friend who was doing the poaching in the daytime. So there's a large hedge, hawthorns and things about. He said it's probably 8 to 10 foot tall. And he sort of turned round to speak to his friend and caught this thing in his peripheral vision and then looked and saw it. And it leapt over the hedge. He said, and he thought it was a young hoss. He meant horse, so HOSS. He said, I thought it were a young oss at first. So I couldn't believe what I was looking at. So what we're saying is that this thing was as big as a small pony or a young, you know, a young horse. He said, and the interesting thing was it leapt over the edge and just landed. He said, where you'd expect a horse to land and move forward because of the momentum, this thing just landed and stuck like a magnet. He said, and sort of knocked me back. I said, look at that. He said, and it was the most peculiar thing he'd ever seen. He said, it glared at them before it ran away. He said, but it was on all fours. And he said, if it had stood up, it would have been over 7 foot and looked like a bodybuilder. He said, he said, it had a tiny waist and a mane like a lion and the face of a baboon. And these are his exact words, and he said it was almost sort of brindle in colour, you know, like a boxer dog or these Staffordshire Bull Terriers. And that was his sighting. He says, well, he said, I went under the edge bottom to try and get a fence stave, he says, to protect myself. He says, although there's nothing we could have done if this thing had decided it were going to come across to us. He said, but the speed it covered crossing the field and into the other wood were quite incredible. You know, that's 4 miles from the coast. All these sightings are quite close to the coast, Connie. And if you go further down the coast towards Hull, in the papers probably 2 years ago, there was the Beast of Barmston Drain that were featured in the UK papers quite often. And this was supposed to be a werewolf that was sort of going. The Barmston Drain runs into the sea, 6 miles from where I'm sat now. So we've got this werewolf-type creature reported moving along the coast. And if you go further up the coast, you've got old folklore and old legends of dogs with glowing red eyes, the Barguest at Whitby and Ravenscar, that's what they termed it, and the Padfoot. And you know, these stories have to have they've come down, they've been handed down in time, but I think there's grains of truth in these stories. So that was his sighting in the 1970s, and he's lived in Grindell all his life, and he's never seen it since. He's never seen it before that, and he'd never seen it after that, which is quite incredible. If this thing, I believe his story, but if this thing was native to that area, you would think that there'd be more evidence of it. So why are we only seeing small glimpses of it, Connie? Do you
Well,
know what I mean?
and that's what you're saying, that they pop in and they pop out along the way, kind of like when I've talked to people before. We had a friend of mine, Lori Williams. She's a remote viewer, and I would have her target Bigfoot, and as she targeted it, she had mentioned how they actually didn't know what it was. You know, she's just looking at this esoteric target that I gave her, and she's talking about how they have these portals, and they would, and time warps, and they would just go through one time warp and then another, and you just see them when they pop into that particular one, you know, in where a human would see them. I find it also interesting when you were saying that RAF is there, the world's oldest operational radar base is right there in all this area where all this crazy stuff happens. And I think I remember seeing a picture.
That might be my phone about to cut out, people, but just it has.
It's cutting in and out?
No, well, it's showing no battery at all now. I'm sorry about this, listeners, but do you want me to hang up and you catch me back? Because I'll be on a
no,
solid
well,
phone.
Well, you're fine right now for sure, and we'll do that at the break for sure. But yeah, but I can hear you. But again, I think it's very strange that this operational radar base, the oldest one, is in the midst of all of these happenings that you're talking about.
That's correct, Connie. And jumping to Bempton, where the animal mutilations are taking place, there's a radar base there, which is 11 miles from Staxton Wold as the crow flies, and that one's closed. That one closed about 72. Officially, it said 68, but it was still operational, albeit sparsely, until 72. And that's on the edge of the North Sea, RAF Bempton, or the remains.
Okay, now he's gone. So we'll definitely contact him back on one of his other phones that he has there. Isn't that crazy? Brand new phone, brand new batteries, and it goes out. Strange, isn't it, when we talk about some of these things that, I don't know. You all know the story. Yeah. Willis Ween continues here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis, and we've got Paul Sinclair as our guest. We're going to talk more about the Flixton werewolf and other things, too, that are creepy in the night.